to the Neil Haley Show on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. And I want to excited to welcome to the program Caregiver Dave. Dave, how are you? You're back from
Hawaii now,
back in LA. You're in California, I know you are. You're rested, aren't you?
Yes, ready to go.
Awesome. No, awesome. So
there's no better way to start LA than to come from Hawaii.
Yeah, but I'm going to be mad, Dave, and say I want to come visit you in LA when it gets cold. It started getting
a little bit.
We had tons of rain, but it started getting a little cold. And I'm sure when we're talking Northeast or we're talking certain places, especially even like thinking about the Midwest and Michigan and stuff like that, cold weather's coming for us. Not for you, Dave. You're lucky.
Hey, it does get cold here. I mean, sometimes it gets down to 65.
All right, our guest is really exciting and very interesting, so go ahead and introduce him.
Well, Triumph Books, great publisher of sport legends, and they even did a book on the Catholic Church, which I think I want to read. But we have the author of Triumph Book, ESPN, Tom Van Haren. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So tell me, Tom, why did you write the book?
Well, I started my career covering Michigan, and so that's the topic of the book. It's called The Road to Ann Arbor. It covers the recruiting stories of 12 former Michigan football players and two current players, and really the idea for the book started on a different idea. I was actually working on a different story, and I was talking to one of Michigan's former recruiting coordinators, Bobby Morrison. And Bobby still follows recruiting to this day, even though he's not with Michigan anymore. And Bobby said, you know, some of these stories you write about the recruits, you think those are good stories. You should hear some of the stories I have. And so I said, you know, I said, I got a couple hours. Why don't we talk? And he started telling me some stories, and it just kind of snowballed from there that, you know, before recruiting services covered recruiting, before the internet, there are so many good stories that haven't been told. And I wanted to do that. So I think we accomplished that, and some big names from Michigan's football past in this book. And people can read now about why they chose Michigan and really how Michigan's history was almost changed a few times with some of these players.
Now, Tom, this is so interesting in the fact that you talk about that and your background with Michigan and things like this, but recruiting process, and that's the thinking of it. What was the reasoning for recruiting and adding that component? You wanted to write about certain things in Michigan, again, with your background from Michigan football, but recruiting, the back stories are so important. But ultimately, a lot of these are high-profile guys, right, that are in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what I wanted to do was mesh two things together, really, is names that people would know, and then from that list, guys who had a good recruiting story, because sometimes, you know, as you can imagine, a big program like Michigan, sometimes there it was just kind of clear cut and dry for their story. Ernest Shazor was one that stood out for Michigan fans. That was a big name. He was a five-star prospect, a big contributor for Michigan. But I talked to Ernest and I said, okay, let's hear your story. And he said, well, I grew up in Michigan. I loved Michigan. I went to their camp and they offered me, and then I committed. And that was the whole story. So, you know, I really had to find the best stories with the biggest names. We have Jim Harbaugh, Mark Messner, Desmond Howard, Brian Greasy, Tom Brady, Chad Henne. So a lot of the biggest names that people, even if you're not a Michigan fan, you'd recognize. And it was really, like I said, trying to find the best stories among those big names. And some of them, you know, it was stuff that I had never heard. And we go all the way back to 1968 with Reggie McKenzie, an All-American offensive lineman. And you really get to see the differences, how the recruiting process has changed all the way back from the 60s through the 2000s and how it's different. So, you know, even if you're not a recruiting fan, I think people would enjoy this book just because it's stories about Michigan. It's stories about some great players and why they chose Michigan. And it's a big part of Michigan's history. So I always tell people, you know, even if you don't follow recruiting, I think you'd enjoy it.
Well, you know, Tom Brady is probably a name that even people who aren't football fans know of. Tell us the story of how Michigan recruited Tom Brady.
Well, that was one of the more interesting ones for me. And I mentioned Bobby Morrison being, you know, kind of the genesis for this book. That was the first story that Bobby told me when we first sat down with Tom Brady's. And other people have tried to write this story of his recruitment, but nobody has told the entire story. And that was a big part of this whole book for me, not just his chapter, was reporting all sides of it, you know, not just getting the player's point of view, because that can sometimes just be a one-sided story. So for Tom, I have his high school teammates. I've got Tom Brady's father is in the book, the Michigan assistant that recruited him, and then opposing coaches as well. But with Tom's chapter, the story goes that everybody knows that Michigan recruited him really late in the process, and Tom sent out a bunch of copies of his film to a bunch of different schools. But the reason why Michigan recruited him so late is actually in this book. And it had to do with another prospect, another quarterback in that class, and how that all played out and what happened. When I said that Michigan's history was almost changed, this chapter, especially with such a high profile name, one decision really could have changed the course of Michigan's history. And it's in this book, that chapter, especially, it explains in detail what happened and how different it could have been for Michigan.
That's crazy in so many ways. And Tom Brady, as we all know, he didn't really do well in Michigan till the end, right? For history, for fans in history in Michigan, right? For football.
Yeah, I mean, it took time. When he first got there, yeah, he didn't play initially when he first got there. And then once he started to see the field, Michigan recruited Drew Henson, Drew was supposed to be all everything. He was a multi-sport star, as a lot of people know. He actually ended up at the end of his career. Drew ended up playing for the Yankees and then went back to football and played for the Cowboys. And once Drew got there, Tom was actually splitting time with Drew Henson. And so his career at Michigan was up and down, and he had to endure a lot. And we go a little bit in the book too. That's another aspect of the book. For each player, we go a little bit into their playing time at Michigan and what that was like as well. So we cover a little bit of that in the book, but yeah, I mean, to say that Tom Brady's best years were ahead of him is probably an understatement.
Well, what about the Desmond Howard recruiting story? Is that a good one too? I'm sure they all are.
Yeah, there really is a cool aspect to each chapter. And Desmond is no exception to that. I mean, his story from start to finish, I think, is pretty remarkable. Just that, you know, he's not the biggest guy. He even in high school, he was he didn't get recruited by a ton of schools, I think probably primarily because of his size. And he was playing in an offense that really didn't throw the ball. His teammate was Elvis Gerbach, who ended up at Michigan as well. But Elvis really didn't throw the ball all that much during the season. So Desmond was featured mainly as a running back and as a safety on defense. So the fact that Michigan landed him and wound up putting him at wide receiver was pretty creative on the part of the staff at Michigan. But yeah, his story is pretty incredible as well. I mean, Georgia Tech was a big factor in it. Nick Saban, when he was at Michigan State, tried to recruit Desmond and couldn't pull it off and couldn't pull him away from Michigan. And his recruitment came down to literally the last day of when Desmond needed to sign that Michigan didn't offer him really until the last minute. And we've got some coaches from opposing teams, Georgia Tech especially, talking about their side of it. How they were camped out in Ohio hoping that Desmond wouldn't sign with Michigan just in case he wanted to sign with Georgia Tech. They were camped out in Ohio waiting for him. So every player has something cool like that, a different aspect to how he wound up at Michigan. But Desmond's certainly an exciting one.
Hey, I'm sure you saw the movie Jerry Maguire. How real was that scenario in the plot on that film?
In terms of
recruiting.
Which aspect of it?
Recruiting.
There's different stories at different schools, and I think everybody has a different experience. And you know, that was one of the aspects that I found with this book was, you know, there really isn't a lot of a lot of extracurriculars at Michigan with Bo Schembechler and even, you know, 1968 with Bump Elliott. There were a few guys that I talked to who experienced some interesting aspects to their recruitment, but surprisingly, they still weren't, they you know, really weren't willing to talk in detail about what happened even now, 30 years later. So, with a school like Michigan, I don't know that you run into a lot of, illegalities or a lot of extracurriculars, but I have heard it covering recruiting over the past, I think I've been doing this for 9-10 years now. I've definitely heard stories of things happening throughout the recruiting process. And, it's kind of a case by case scenario with the player and then with the school as well. I think that's how I would put it, just to be safe.
and then you talk about that and the process and how crazy it is now. They're signing kids in 7th, 8th grade, right? Sixth grade. The recruiting process is changing even more since the stories you wrote in the book, right? Now these kids are being set up where they're going to go so early.
It's changed even since when I started covering recruiting, which, like I said, hasn't really been that long, 9 years now. That was an interesting aspect just for me writing the book, was to, like I said, going through the decades to see how different it is. And one of the cooler aspects of the book, I think, Mark Messner, a former All-America defensive lineman, his mom saved all of his recruiting letters, the actual letters that they got. She saved them all. She's got them in a binder, and they sent some of them to us, and we've got them in the book. Just to even read some of those letters and what the message is and compare it to now. I mean, it's night and day. There's a letter in there that there's a letter from Bo Schembechler to Mark that says something along the lines of, I hope you had a good summer. We'll be watching you over your senior year and we'll talk to you afterwards. And it's like, to think about if a coach sent that letter today, they would not land any recruits. They would probably eventually get fired for not landing any recruits, because with social media and text messaging and all the technology that's out there now, these coaches really, it's a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week process for them, that they're in contact with these kids all the time and trying to recruit them all the time. And if you're not, you're probably not going to win out on a lot of kids. So, everything has changed so much that you got to offer early. You've got to offer as a freshman or you're not even going to be in the conversation anymore. And that compared to, we talked about Desmond Howard, where he didn't get a scholarship offer until the last minute where he could sign. There's no way that you could do that now and still land a kid like they did with Desmond Howard.
Wow. Sounds like you really learned a lot during this recruiting process. How do you think it's going to be like 5 or 10 years from now? Can you even imagine?
No, I can't. We joke about it all the time. Right, yeah. A lot of the recruiting reporters, I think we kind of joke with each other that it's gotten so out of hand that I don't know how much more of a circus we can have with the recruiting process. But, I don't know. I mean, I think that the NCAA and the council they've been, even over the past couple of years, they've been looking at rule reform and changing a lot of the rules and trying to make it more accommodating to both sides, because, I mentioned it's 24 hours a day now for these coaches. I think a lot of the coaches are getting burnt out. They're not getting a lot of family time, and they're spending all their free time just trying to recruit. So, I think if anything, it's probably going to get toned down more than it will get, more on the crazy end. I think eventually we'll hit a point where there's a peak and one side, coaches or the recruits even, I think one side is going to say, hey, we got to change something because it's too much. So
exactly.
I think we'll probably lean more towards that side, where we'll get more rules in place and more reform in place to create a more balanced recruiting process for everybody.
You think it'll be, or we'll go straight to pay for play, right? That all the kids will be played in college and the recruiting process will be more money making, right? If that happens, I'm going to offer you $10,000, or I'm going to offer you if college athletes no longer amateur and are paid, what could that do? That could make the recruiting process even crazier.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about before with illegalities going on, I think people, you know, that stuff happens now anyways. And I think bringing it to the table, you know, I think a lot of within a lot of things within college football, I think bringing money to the table could probably make it less dirty. I mean, I really do, because I think in amateur sports, I think that now you kind of have to hide all that stuff, and you know, it's all kind of in the behind the scenes. And I'm a proponent of, especially with a players like this, of letting players make money off of their own likeness. If a kid can make money off of signing autographs, I think he should be able to do that. It's his name, it's his brand, it's his autograph. I think he should be able to do that. So I don't know in terms of actually paying recruits of, you know, upfront giving them money for signing with a school. I don't know if there's a great solution for that would work out for both sides. I don't know what that solution is, but I do think that there's a solution where we can allow some of these players to benefit off of their own name. I don't think that's too egregious, and I don't think that's something that would impact the amateurism of the sport, where there's already millions and billions of dollars being thrown around anyway.
Yeah, see, that's why I brought up the movie Jerry Maguire. You know, in the beginning, he wrote this great manifesto of what was wrong with the recruiting process, and everybody says, yeah, finally somebody said it, and then he got fired.
Right. Yeah, like I said, I don't know what the solution is. You know, I think we should be willing to talk about it. I think we should be willing to change it. I don't know how you come. I don't know that there is really an answer that everybody would be happy with. But I do think it's something that you know, the sport has evolved. We've evolved with a lot of things around football in general, and I think the NCAA needs to look at it in terms of at least, like I said, at least the likeness. At least allowing the players to profit off of their own name.
Mm-hmm. Well, where can we find more information?
I have a website up about the book. It's called roadtoannarbor.com. There's links on there and where you can purchase the book. You can purchase it at triumphbooks.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Anywhere you can buy books, pretty much, it should be available.
And you're still writing for ESPN, Tom, and stuff, right? People can check where's the best stuff for you with all your writing, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on ESPN.com. I'm on Twitter at TomVH as well, and just kind of plugging away during the season here.
Hey, what do you think in college football? Who's the team to beat?
Well, I mean, I know this is going to sound ridiculous. It's going to be a little unbelievable, but Alabama has a pretty good football team, and I know that's hard to believe. I think Alabama. I, in the beginning of the season, I predicted we had to put out playoff predictors, and I put Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and then my flyer was USC, which it looks like I was wrong on that one. But I still think the other three: Ohio State, Alabama, and Clemson. I'm still going to roll with them to make the playoffs. And then I picked Alabama to win.
And what do you think?
That's sad to a USC alumni like me.
What do you think of Penn State in this year? They looked batting it in the first half against Pitt. I'm a Pitt fan, but don't get me started in the second half of Pitt. But what do you think of Penn State? Do you think they have a shot at winning the Big Ten or not?
You know, I think the jury's still out on them. I will say I was surprised by that Pitt game, that they were so explosive in that second half, and they came out and you know, as lopsided as it ended up being, especially after that first game, because I want to see Penn State in Big Ten play in a couple games first before I really say anything definitive. You know, you replace a guy like Saquon Barkley and all everything running back. Yep. It's tough to do that. They're trying to replace production on the outside at receiver as well. And then what really nobody was talking about going into the season, because of that hole left by Saquon Barkley, was the production on defense that they needed to replace. They've got a lot of young names and a lot of new names on defense. And that's really the area that I want to see in conference play. If that group can solidify and progress during the season, then I think for sure they have a shot. I think they've got a shot, but I want to see how that defensive group comes together first before I say one way or another.
All right, Tom, I got a different kind of question. Caregiver Dave has a question for you. The reason why he's called Caregiver Dave. Dave, go ahead and ask Tom a question, the final question of our show always.
Sure. Well, I'm at caregiverdave.com. So, you know, I've been a caregiver since my wife had a stroke 22 years ago, lost her speech, became paralyzed. Now I'm a caregiver to the caregivers. But, you know, Tom, there's a lot of talk about traumatic brain injury symptoms plaguing retired football players and a lot of caregivers watching over them as they get older. Do you think this is a real problem in the NFL?
Well, I think my stance on that is that I don't think it's just an NFL problem. I think it's a football issue. You know, that's something that needs to be talked about, especially with youth football. I think that's really where it starts.
Yeah.
Because you know we've got studies out there about traumatic brain injuries, and we've got studies about trauma and hits to the head in youth. And to me, that's when it really starts. Is that you know I'm obviously a football fan. I'm for football, but I think the training needs to be if you're going to have kids playing at such a young age playing tackle football, then the training and the awareness needs to be on point, and it needs to be. It needs to be across the board where, you know, everybody is educated to the right fundamentals and educated on symptoms and awareness of head injuries. And I think to me, that's really where it starts is that we've got to have everybody educated on everything. And we need to make a decision on how to, no pun intended, how to tackle it. In the youth game and through high school as well, because I think that's really where you learn the game. You learn the fundamentals of it. And if we've got more awareness on that end, then I think the results probably be a little bit different in the back end.
There's no easy solution for football lovers. Unfortunately, the human brain was not meant to be traumatized the way it is in the game.
Tom, it concerns me. I saw a concussion, and I don't know. And like I said, we see these athletes and the decisions they make so out of control at certain ages, and it's just really, really sad for sure. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Tom, and good luck the rest of college football season. We'll stay in touch, and thanks for coming on the show.
No problem.
Thanks
for having me.
All right,
take care. Bye-bye. All right, thanks. Okay, bye-bye. You listen to the Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a moment.